Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon or good morning on the West Coast. It's still morning out there. And we want to welcome you to part two of our favorite science fiction films of all time. But before that, part one was actually rescheduled for tomorrow. So we'll have Noel Vera on tomorrow at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. But today, we have one of our favorite guests and guest panelists and host and everything, the wonderful, the incredible queen of sci-fi, Miss Vicki Love. Hello, Miss Vicki.
Hello, Carl. And for all of you out there that don't realize, Carl never said that we are on Carl's Cavern today. And what our topic is, our favorite 15, I didn't choose this, our favorite 15 science fiction movies, I guess, of all time. But so anyway, that's what our topic is. And thanks for having me, Carl.
Oh, you're more than welcome, Vicki. So I'm going to basically just pass it over to you and let you go through your list. I'm going to make some comments here and there. And we have some things that we absolutely agree on. But you go right ahead. Introduce your list and whatever you want to say.
I want you to tell the audience why we're doing this. Okay, why in the world did we why in the world did you contact me to put on a list 15 of my favorite science fiction movies?
Well, you know, if all would have went to plan, we would have done part one with Noel Vera. And Noel Vera is a good friend, and he's from the Philippines. He's one of the premier film critics of the Philippines. And he posted his favorite 15. And I said, oh, that would be a good show. So I contacted Vicki, and that's how we got this started.
Okay. And so then what I did was at first I said no. Because, and I firmly believe this, to make someone like myself, who is a mostly science fiction or in books and television also fantasy watcher and reader, I like crime shows, but, you know, I spend my time in science fiction. And so to make me, or even ask me politely, as you politely asked me, to come up with 15 of my favorites. It's not 15 of the best of 1970s. It's not the best of the 21st century or the second half of the 20th century, anything like that. No, it's your favorite 15. So as I'm listing my favorite 15, I'm realizing that the ones that I watch over and over again are way more than 15. But I do cycle through them and say like 12 months at a time. I cycle through probably 20 to 30 different films, and I watch them over and over again over the years. So to pin me down on 15 of those 30, so that's only half of, say, 30, it's really hard because, like, sometimes I get on to the whole train of Doom. Like, next Friday I'm going to go and I already have my ticket. I'm going out to see the second part of the new Dune film. And sometimes I'll get on the kick and I'll watch everything I own that is Dune. So I'll watch Lynch's Dune, and then I'll watch the miniseries Dune. And now I also have the Blu-ray of the new Dunes coming out. And so I'll cycle through that. Or I'll get on an Arnie kick, and I'll watch Terminators, the first two especially, Terminator Judgment Day, and then go to Predator, because in my mind, Terminator and Predator are on the list at the same number. because that's how my brain works. So I just want to start out with what's on my list, which I have AAA. I didn't even start with number one. I started with AAA, and that means these two franchises that I watch all the time. And it doesn't matter really which movie I watch, because I watch all of them all the time. And so my first franchise, of course, is Godzilla. Because, I mean, except for Godzilla and that monkey creature that was supposed to be King Kong, I guess, I don't like that movie. I don't watch it. But other than that one, I watch all Godzilla. And the newest one, Godzilla Minus One, was so freaking fantastic. I can't wait to own it. Oh, put it on my shelf. Watch it over and over again. But so on my film list, there's no Godzilla, because I can't really choose which one. I can tell you which ones I dislike the most. I don't like Godzilla and King Kong fighting each other. I hate that. I really freaking hate that, because that's a kind of a male thing, you know, and you guys are really aggressive people. And you always want, would Godzilla beat King Kong? And that's just stupid, because they're allies, okay? They're allies. You know, Godzilla's over here on Monster Island. King Kong's over here on Skull Island. And they help protect the world. I don't know why they like humans so much, but they want to protect the world for us. So stop making them fight each other. You hear that? Stop it. Okay, my second franchise, of course.
Okay, before
yeah,
we move
what do you
on
have to
that,
say about Godzilla?
I do have to say that I think the original Godzilla, Gojira, and not the Americanized version was Raymond Burr, but that one's definitely on my list. That is just an incredible film. And I have yet to see the new Godzilla, but from what I understand, it harkens back to the original and the despair and all of that. You know, of course, the original was a reaction to Nagasaki and Hiroshima. And so Gojira, the original one, and watch the original in the Japanese. Don't, you know, seriously, that's an absolutely incredible film, and that's on my list. That's all I want to say.
Yeah, no, that's good, because if you don't know Godzilla, then you should probably start at the beginning. And you should watch that one. Plus, you should also, I really advocate that you should watch the Americanized one, too, the one with Raymond Burr. Because if it wasn't that Hollywood grabbed a hold of Godzilla, there probably wouldn't be a million Godzilla movies, because once, you know, the American people could have been satisfied with one or two or 10 Godzilla movies, it was just open for people to reinterpret. And I hate that word reinterpret, but that's what happened with Godzilla. I'd say Godzilla franchise is the first one that ever had the re-imaging and the reinterpretation of Godzilla. And so if you have not watched Godzilla movies and you really want to know what they're all about, you should go back to the first couple and then go from there. Go, you know, even the Matthew Broderick one is kind of silly, but it has some good things in it. Okay, so, yeah, Godzilla. My other AAA franchise is, of course, Alien. And all the other movies. And I mean all the other movies except Requiem, which I cannot watch. So I'm going to put a little asterisk there with a warning. If you watch Requiem, be prepared for things that you just might not like at all. Okay, that's all I'm going to say. Pregnant women, aliens, you get the picture. It's just a really terrible concept movie. But other than that, and I'm talking about Ridley Scott's prequels, Prometheus and the other two, I watch them all the time, all the frickin' time. And I have friends who hate those movies, and I have friends who watch them with me. So Alien is a AAA franchise for me, but above all, if you've never watched Alien movies, you should watch the franchise. You should watch Alien first, Ridley Scott's Alien.
By the way, Vicky, yeah. We have a guest.
Okay.
Hello, caller.
Hello. First thing I want to say is everything that Carl says is wrong and everything Vicky says is right.
Oh, my God, Steven, I love you. Oh, my God. Oh, my ears are jumping for joy. Oh, my God.
And I do agree with you about Godzilla. Why else would Criterion have both versions on the disc rather than ignore the American dub?
Yeah, you know, you're right about, you know, Criterion does almost everything right, okay? And you have to acknowledge the fact that America plays a huge part in the story of the Godzilla franchise. You know, that's just the way it is. Steven, did you have a chance to see Godzilla Minus One?
No, I've been sick since October in the KHS, so I've been basically holed up.
Well, you're going to be in for a treat whenever they finally put it out there.
The color or black and white?
I only saw the color one, but I'm sure it's really great in black and white. I'm sure it's just as stunning. But in color, it's very stunning. It's like Godzilla is, you know, everything that when you're watching Godzilla in black and white and your imagination is going in the color one, it's like, and then the color one isn't like Technicolor. It's not like brilliant, you know, colors everywhere. It's pretty subdued. It's not a sepia, you know, it's not that, but it's subdued. It's not, you know, Wizard of Oz color.
Yeah.
So
and
it adds to it.
Carl, I can prove Vicky's right with Godzilla with this one thing.
Okay. Do it.
How many people know, and is it included on the Criterion disc, Gigantus the Fire Monster?
I'm not sure if that's included or not. I don't have the disc set, so I can't say, but I would hope it was.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's
terrible.
The dub they did of Godzilla Rises Again, only that the company that had it didn't have the right to the Godzilla name, so they called it Giganta, the Fire Monster.
You know, I just saw the picture of that just like last week. And I'm like, is this Godzilla? What are they doing?
Is this
yeah,
Godzilla?
See, sometimes they... Well, that's just like when I said that Alien Requiem is just so bad that don't watch it, even if you love the franchise, because every once in a while, that re-imaging is really crappy. Like, don't watch The Rings of Power. It's so horrible. Just watch Lord of the Rings.
Vicky, are you talking about Alien versus Predator Requiem?
Yeah, that one. I guess, are the Predators?
Even
yeah,
if
because
you
he's a...
it, you can't see it. They killed that movie so damn dark that people complained at the box office that they had screwed up the focus and lighting on the film.
Exactly. Exactly. People wanted their money back. Yes, okay, there are parts that I would have loved that the parts in the hospital those would have been too dark to see. That would have been better. But what do you really want to see? You want to see the aliens, the predators, and that hybrid alien-predator fight, right?
Oh,
that's what you want to see.
The alien, I've seen a clear picture of it. God, that looks so much awesome.
Yes, but you couldn't see the fight, and that's why you went to the freaking movie theater, was to see that fight, and you couldn't see it. I remember sitting in my movie theater thinking, oh, my sons were so mad. They're with me. They were younger teenagers back then. And they're like, who could see it? We left the theater really mad.
Okay, we need to move this along a little bit, guys. So okay. You want to continue on your list, Vic?
On my list? Okay.
Yeah.
Number one on my list is Alien. But I already said Alien franchise and Alienism. So number two on my list is The Thing, John Carpenter's The Thing. Although The Thing from Another Planet, the 1950s movie, is also worth your while watching. But it's not nearly as scary, I don't think, as John Carpenter's. Oh, hey, Carl, that thought about certain people's movies that they make a bunch of movies, maybe John Carpenter could be in that.
Oh, absolutely.
He's not a novelist.
Absolutely.
He's not a novelist, but anyway, okay. Anyway, The Thing, John Carpenter's Thing is number two on my list. What do you guys think?
Well,
that would be
high
up on
exactly
close to one.
That would be one up for you, Stephen?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
yeah,
I have a hard time with
one.
One or two, yeah.
Would not be
That's
on
why
my
I don't
list.
Like favorite.
However, what I do have to say about that is when I went to the theater, and there's that one section where the body explodes and then you get the spider in the head. Okay.
Yeah.
Most incredible practical effects I've ever seen. Everybody in the theater says, what the fuck? Stephen, you even do it better than me. So go ahead.
Well,
Stephen?
That's the same for me for Alien when with Chestburster. I thought that was a more... what the fuck moment than even in The Thing with the, you know, spider head.
Well, I can do it better than you, Carl Ned. Quote the movie,
go
Ned. You gotta be fucking kidding me. Which was his legit reaction because none of the actors knew that spider alien was going to crawl across the floor like that.
Yeah, you know, that's a big difference between the older films and these newer CGI bullshit films, like, you know, every superhero film. The actors have to pretend to react to something that's within their minds, whereas on Alien and The Thing, they were reacting to these incredible props that the prop people made. I mean, come on.
Agreed. But Alien, The Thing is a great film. Don't get me wrong. One thing you'll notice, as I get to my list at one point or another in the next 2 days, Vicki and I have a little different taste when it comes to sci-fi. I tend to be a little different than that, but we'll table that for now. Vicki, go ahead. Keep going.
Yeah,
tell
you know what?
You
see, that's why I don't like to do favorites. Because everyone is an individual. And you don't like a film because your buddy over there likes it. You like a film because you like it. Because it brings something to your life. I could care fucking less if it brings something to your life. Unless, of course, you like it. I don't want you to compare your shit to my shit. That's why I hate doing shows like this.
Okay, well, we're not doing that. So go ahead. Keep going.
No, we're not. We're not. You just said that. So anyway. Okay, next on my list is Dune. David Lynch's Dune. I've watched that a million times. Maybe not a million, hyperbole, but a million times. I love it. There are certain quotes from that film that I just can't ever forget. I love the quirkiness of it, the grossness of it. I've also read the books, book one and two, so I do like the things that he picked out of the book to put in there. But also, you know, the movie studio chopped his movie up. So,
badly.
No, the theatrical release. Go ahead.
Just on the verge of Dune 2 coming out. If Jason Momoa doesn't call Paul Atreides a young pup, we riot.
Yes. No kidding. No kidding. Come on. There are certain things about Dune that have to be, I mean, even the miniseries, I think, is the best iteration of Dune. I don't care. All these people picking, that actor was terrible, that actor was good, that actor can't understand, blah, 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 bullshit. Okay? What you want is the story. And so the miniseries took enough time to stretch it and tell the whole story. That's why I like it. And leave in those iconic quotes from the book, Young Pup, which that first movie of Dennis's is just lacking in every bit of information that is needed. The visuals are great. You guys, did you see it, Carl?
Yeah, I saw Bone and Ash. Yeah,
okay, because I think Stephen and I talked about this before. I think we talked about it, Stephen. And
yeah,
the visuals
and now
are great.
I like the 3-hour cut better, even though it's a little lean on the second half.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because at first I didn't like it. It put me to sleep. It was too boring. The visuals aren't enough to keep me awake.
No, I'm talking about the long-cutted David Lynch version.
Oh, yeah. I like the David Lynch version. Everyone was so passionate in that movie. They were passionate about what they were doing. They were passionate about, you know, bringing the characters to life. I don't know. Thought it was pretty good. And that Vladimir Harkonnen, I don't remember the actor's name. He's so freaking gross and over the top. What is his name? I can't think of it. Let me see if I can get my... I have the movie right here. Let's see if I can find his name. If it's out here. I don't have a list of the actors. I have the tin. Well, anyway, the actor, he was over the top for the Baron, and I think, and nothing against Skarsgård, okay? I mean, to put on a bunch of weight for your acting role is commendable right there. But the whole sleepy tone of Baron Harkonnen in a bunch of oil floating around is just not my idea of the Baron. He's got to be over the top energetic and gross, and his appetites have to be shown. I mean, really shown, because he's got some really ugly appetites.
Yes, he does.
Anyway.
Give us your next
Dune
one.
Is number three. Oh, my next one? Okay, this is probably the movie I watch the most out of all movies, okay? This is 2001 A Space Odyssey, of course, Kubrick's movie. I have this movie in three different forms. I have it on DVD, I have it on Blu-ray, and I have it on special Blu-ray or whatever it's called. And to tell you the truth, the DVD version has the best special feature.
Villain.
Okay, I didn't hear that. My phone's not working very well today.
James McMillan?
Oh,
Kenneth.
That's his name?
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, well, he's just so fantastic as the Baron. When you say Baron Harkonnen to me, his face pops up first. You know what, those big things all over him, and the doctor guy who loves to work on him. I mean, that's just so freaking repulsive that it's good.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So anyway, we don't really have to spend too much time on A Space Odyssey because it's like everyone agrees how great it is, except for Generation Z idiots. Yep, I called you idiots. You know, they don't study. They don't know much about anything. So Gen Z, sit down, be quiet, and absorb, okay? Watch 2001 and try to transcend the CGI, okay?
Carl,
number
could you
five,
stand in front of me?
What?
Stand in front of me for a second, Carl.
Okay, go for it.
I found 2001 kind of dry up to the part with Hal.
Oh. I happen to agree with them. We stand side by side on this one.
Well,
no, I stand behind you, so you take the first hits.
Oh, okay. Fine.
Okay. Now, this is where a science fiction person who's always wanted to go, or a science fiction reader who has always wanted to go into space and seen the spaceship and the space station and the docking and all of that back when I was 16 was absolutely cool. Now, as a person who's a lot older than 16, I still don't mind that for that beginning because the music and the space station twirling and the spaceship coming in for docking, the way that it's edited is so beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. It's beautiful music for my ears and beautiful editing for my eyes. And so I don't find it boring.
And sadly, most people haven't got to see it in 70 millimeter, which is the way that Kubrick shot it and the way it's meant to be seen.
Right. Right.
It is a special film. There's no doubt about it. I remember I had a friend of mine who ran the drive-in, Howard. He had a private theater and one time got completely stoned and watched that in his private theater along with about 3-4 other people. And just like, it's an outstanding visual treat. It truly is.
It is.
We're going to get on to one the film that is my favorite film, which a lot of people compare 2001, but we'll let you get to it first, Vicki. So go ahead.
Oh, okay. Okay, number five is Blade Runner for me, and Blade Runner, both films. You have to see the first film before you see the second film. And a lot of people thought that the second film was boring. I found it not boring at all, quite engaging. I'm not a Harrison Ford fan, not even in the least. I'm not a Harrison Ford fan. But even when the desert part and the Las Vegas part, when Harrison Ford shows up, still, I like the film. And Blade Runner was before Harrison Ford really went downhill in his acting. Or I don't know. He's always the same voice, always the same dude. I still like Blade Runner 5 because of everything else in the movie. And so I watch it. Okay, number six is the most underrated sci-fi film of all sci-fi films, in my opinion. And that is Escape from New York. Absolutely. No one ever puts it on their list, and it's a total shame because Snake Plissken and all the other iconic characters in that movie were, I mean, they show up in video games everywhere. Of course, Snake does. But also the other characters, because they are iconic, dystopian, wonderfully realized characters. Adrian Barbeau is all over video games. But the telling of that story, Manhattan turned into a giant walled prison. Fantastic. It's just, I just love that movie. And I think it's underrated to the maximum. That's why it's number six.
Steven,
and
I'm
going to
let.
Go ahead.
I'm just going to let Steven comment on there.
You're the caper. You're a number one.
So great.
And I'm number two. We both love that. No, movie. I don't think it's underrated.
You're number one, Danny. That means you.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah. Sure. That is. It's a great movie. Keep going. Go ahead.
Well, you know, I don't think it's underrated, okay? I mean, you get all sorts of comments on ISF and so on and so forth. But the thing is, people who love John Carpenter, and we've done several shows on Carpenter, that's one of their favorites, no question. It is an action standard, and it's wonderful. It's a wonderful film. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Would you agree with me that it's not underrated, Steven?
No, I would say it's a cult classic because it bombed at the box office. Do not forget that. Always take that in contention. Sadly, it bombed at the box office.
Yeah, that it is a cult classic, but it's not mentioned enough. I just don't think that.
I know. Most people try to put, like, snobby sci-fi films, not like the Russian films, Carl. You know, the ones that make them look smarter by watching them.
Yeah. Okay. Fuck you. We'll get to
that. No. I said not like the Russian films because you always see the one you're going to pick on there either. Those no. lists.
Yeah. Yeah,
you'll see a follow-up to it, but not the one you're going to pick, Carl.
Okay,
well, I love
next
the one
comes, next comes Predator, number seven on my list, because now I don't watch Predator as much as some of these other films, but the thing is, Predator is the best of the Predator movies. And yet, when I'm on sci-fi websites, I'm on posting boards, listening to people or reading their lists and things or why they like this Predator or that, Predator is not number one for them. They like all the other Predator movies, the ones with more gore and more fighting and more. Whereas Predator, the original movie, has a great story, a freaking great story to it. And that's probably why my list has all these great stories on it. So Predator is number seven for me.
Well, the right way I'd rank them is Predator number one, Predators two, and then Prey number three.
Oh, Prey is absolutely... I introduced one of my sons to Prey not too long ago, and he was like, oh, my God, this is so great.
Okay.
Yeah, Prey
the
is really good.
The one thing I have
good.
To say about Predator, I got two words. Well, actually, three. Bill fucking Duke. Steven, take it from there.
And Sonny Landham. The guy who was so crazy on set that they hired bodyguards to keep him from fucking people up.
And what's his name who just died?
Carl Weathers.
Yes, Carl Weathers. I can see his face. Yeah, I mean, yes, absolutely. The cast on that film is really, really good.
And
really
the
good.
Cast is so good, they could pull off the one great rule. Anyone can die at any time.
Yep.
Yeah.
Even to the very end, well, we didn't even know if Arnie is going to make it.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we'd never seen anything like a predator before, which is another great thing about that film. It introduced, just like Alien, it introduced this new type of creature that could just wipe the fuck out of humans. You're dead. Hey, in fact, we hunt humans for fun and for hierarchy placement, you know? We send our teenagers to get humans.
I really like Prey, by the way. I want to do a nice little nod to that film because that was goddamn great. Seriously.
Yeah.
It's one of those you weren't expecting it to be great. You was expecting it to be another Predator movie like Predator 2, and then you just sit there with your jaw dropped all the way through it, especially if you watch it in Cherokee.
Yeah.
Well, I have not watched it in the Cherokee, but I've watched it
I
three
have.
Times.
It's phenomenal. I think it adds
just,
more to it.
Just, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, of course it does. Of course it does. Just like watching Godzilla in Japanese is, you
yeah,
know, it
right.
brings more to it. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
of course. And so, yeah, but we couldn't have a Prey without Predator, without the original story. And Prey
exactly.
is so much like the original story. There's I like predators, you know, predators with the S, because
yeah,
when they're dropped on that planet, and they have a pretty good cast also, and you don't know who's going to survive. You just don't know if Adrian Brody is going to survive or not. And, of course, Lawrence Fishburne is in it. Oh, I love him. And he plays Crazy Guy, and it's so good. And then there's this wonderful fight between the predator and the human, the one
ninja.
Who has the, yes, the ninja. Yes, it's so beautifully set in the tall grass. It's just a beautiful scene. Yeah, great. Yeah, Stephen, you and I were
right,
on the same page. Okay, number eight, Interstellar. Now, I'm surprised myself when I go on to my favorite sci-fi sites. A lot of people like this movie, and some people, a lot more than I would ever imagine, put it as their number one film. Now, this is a lot of young people, and I mean like millennials. And so... there's something about Interstellar that makes it gripping, and that is we've all dreamed of going to space. Well, lots of us have. Going to space, going here or there, being in Star Trek or something with warp drive there and there and there. But that whole going through a wormhole, ending up where there's a black hole, because black holes are supposedly in theoretical physics spawn these wormholes. You go to where the black hole is, you get caught in the gravitational pull of the black hole, and then time just starts warping. So when you try to, or if you achieve going back to your point of origin, it's totally different. Decades or maybe even hundreds or thousands of years have changed, you know, have gone by. So I think that Interstellar tugs at not just the heartstrings, but also with the good science of what do we actually think when we go into space. I think Interstellar is just a fantastically great idea movie. And I don't care if I'm alone on that.
Well, you may be.
I hear the puppies.
I'm just saying. Yeah,
well, you
puppies.
Don't know physics like I do. And so, I mean, there's some stuff in Interstellar I don't like too much, but the whole global climate change and the GMO thread where the corn isn't even healthy to eat anymore, and it's not even healthy right now. I mean, those things are very scientifically based, and so you put a story along with that, and you see that humans are going to go extinct, and it's quite a heady type science fiction film, which I like. Okay, number 9 is The Day the Earth Stood Still, War of the Worlds, and Robinson Crusoe on Mars, and Forbidden Planet. The reason why all of those are on there is the 1950s movie. And, Carl, I think you have a 1950s movie on your list, too.
I have a couple.
There's so many in the 1950s.
One that you do share that you just mentioned. One that you do share that you just mentioned is of Forbidden Planet, which I love. I mean, both of you and I saw these things on TV, on Chiller Theater and Science Fiction Theater and such as kids.
No.
And
no.
You suckers, well, for me, anyway. But all of those films, every one of those films you mentioned are important to me, and important to me in terms of, you know, growing up and loving science fiction because of them. And also, we both read when we were kids, too. And so a lot of that, you know, the Robinson Crusoe on Mars, you know, is just a great version of Robinson Crusoe. And just,
which,
you know,
I never
those,
read
those
as
great
a kid.
No, I didn't read that until I was later. But I actually read sort of like a, you know, those Reader Digest type of things. You know, condensed.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, go ahead, Steve.
And let's not forget, Robinson Crusoe on Mars is the first science fiction movie ever made.
Yep. Yes. Yes. There's a lot of, I mean, some of it's silly, but like the big bulk fire on Mars and Mars, but they tried to get the spaceship right. Like when the when Batman, you know, Adam West is the captain on the spaceship, and he doesn't make it, unfortunately. But when he's speaking to the other guy who becomes the Robinson Crusoe stuck on Mars, they tried their best to make it look like he's floating, and they ate yucky paste stuff for their food, and they had a monkey to do experiments with. And so it was kind of, you know, for 1950s science in the movies, it's kind of okay.
Oh, yeah. Better than it came from outer space, for example. You know, I mean, yeah, science-wise.
And, you know, The Day the Earth Stood Still, there are plenty of us, I know there are people that think like I do, that wish that the aliens would just come down and make some sense out of our craziness on this planet. You know, stop us from using nukes, stop climate, you know, deterioration, you know, kick Trump off the planet, you know, just all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, Day the Earth Stood Still is an iconic film of the 50s. I think everyone should watch. But that's you know, one of my favorite films.
I love this message. You take care of your business, or we'll take care of it. And we won't be as nice.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, because he stands there and he says, we have given up our ways, because the robots here are told us that if we didn't settle down, they were going to destroy us. So there's a coalition out there who agrees, and so you're breaking the rules, Earth people. Yeah, it's a good message. It's a great message. And you know what else is really good about that film is when he goes to talk to the leaders of the world, the Americans are like, no, you're going to talk to our president. You're not going to get all the other leaders of the world together. You can talk to our president first, and we'll decide, you know? And it's just like, yeah, freaking Americans. Yeah, it's a good one. Okay, number 10. This is a recent, a 21st century film, and I love this film. There are parts of it that I don't like too much because it wasn't in the book, but I have to tell you first, I'm a total fan of these books, the Southern Reach trilogy. They have a grip on my imagination, and so Annihilation, the film with Princess Padme in it.
Natalie Portman.
Yes, Natalie Portman. The whole idea of what you take that word and look it up in the dictionary if you don't know what annihilation means. And the exact, the writer is a professor at a college, of course. Annihilation is exactly what this thing, it comes from outer space, it's like a meteor, and it crashes at a lighthouse, and it starts changing Earth. And this harkens back to the film that I absolutely love, Andromeda Strain by Michael Crichton. So I should put Annihilation / Andromeda Strain. They both start with A's. Spooky. No, they're about something hitching a ride on a meteor coming down or an asteroid crashing into Earth and starting to change things. Andromeda Strain is about something that changes human beings, you know, like COVID. And Annihilation is like this agent that changes all kinds of living matter. And once the story gets into the shimmer, then mm-hmm. it becomes weird and beautiful and extremely cool. And then the ending part in the, close to the end, in the lighthouse, that was one of the scariest things I've seen in recent years. I think Annihilation is a 2016 film, and it was kind of haunting to see it. And so that's my number 10. Really, really like it. You guys have any kind
of...
Do
you want to hear my top three real quick, Carl?
Yes.
Go for it.
I do.
Well, my number three, well, if this is what you want, Carl, this is what you get. Let's go all the way back to 1990, and a new guy out of, he's just wandering, man, like the character he has in his movie. Did a move, a little sci-fi movie. They got X rating over here for about 15 seconds, and that is Richard Stanley's Hardware. Set in a very depressing, drear future where nothing is there except for a war out in the outland, and it's about Hard Mo Baxter, who comes back from the front, and he has a big dose of radiation, and he's here to get with his girl. But to give her the giving present, he gets this pile of junk that this wandering man, a key returning figure in almost all of Stanley's films, comes in. It turns out that the thing that she gives him is a self-replicating population control robot.
Oh, wow.
Who finds out that the girl is pregnant. And the rest of the movie is basically her getting down and boogieing with him while Pomo's trying to get back into the apartment with the robot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an amazing film, an amazing visual.
Well, I'll have to hunt that one down.
You
haven't
seen
ever
yeah,
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, both Stephen and I are big Richard Stanley fans. We both are.
Hardware is great. What did you like about Hardware, Carl?
Basically everything.
Yeah.
It's well paced. It's got great action. It has I'm going to borrow a line. It has a philosophy. I really liked it. We also love Dust Devil. You and I have actually done a commentary watch on Stanley's film.
And the movie that's pretty much a good side companion to the one Vicky picked as her number 10.
Mm-hmm.
Annihilation?
Yeah, and that's The Color Out of Space.
Oh, I love that. I just watched that again the other day. I got to buy it because I keep renting it. Stephen, yes. That movie is fantastic.
No, I agree. Yeah.
And my number two were the two Disney sci-fi oops of the 1970s. I just love them so much. And that is one, The Black Hole. This is my number two, Black Hole, and The Watcher in the Woods. In case you're wondering, The Watcher in the Woods is a ghost story. Depends on what cut you see.
True.
There is a cut where the little girl is kidnapped by an alien whose UFO has crashed into the moors.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then that's
so
not a ghost, is it?
No.
What?
It's not a ghost, then.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a...
But the version that Disney released in theaters tried to get rid of all the sci-fi elements to make it into a ghost story, and it didn't fit. And then we got the trade in paperback, which included the sci-fi material. You know, the tie-in paperback, and it had the sci-fi material, and we're like, oh, that would have been a better movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then Anchor Bay got the rights to release that footage. I don't know how. They couldn't even get the real ending of The Black Hole. Which is him going through the wormhole and becoming flowers in our planet again.
Yeah,
yep.
That's it's disappointing that they couldn't leave it like that.
No.
And number one is one surprise you didn't mention, Vicky, and that is The Tragedy of Jerome Newton, as I subtitle it.
The Man Who Fell to Earth.
Yeah, Nicholas Rogue,
you know
The Man Who Fell to Earth.
Because we did a watch on that, you and I.
Yeah.
And because I can only pick 15. That's when I first started talking, I said I have like 30 that I watch. But I can only pick 15.
Yep.
That's a...
And
trust me, there's a lot not on my list, too, because of that.
Yeah.
Keep going,
and
Vic.
If you haven't seen the longest cut of it that's out there, you haven't seen The Man Who Fell to Earth. Because the shorter cuts are a little bit confusing, aren't they, guys?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. Do love that film, no question. Not on my
well,
top 15.
We watched the longer cut.
Yeah.
You and I watched the longer cut.
Yeah,
Carl was there too.
Oh, Carl, you too, sorry.
Yeah, we were all on that show.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, we do so many shows. How can we remember? Really? Nice. All right, Vic, I'm going to let you get going here. And let's keep going.
Well, we have 2 hours, right?
Yeah, we have 2 hours.
You better made this for 2 hours. Okay, my next one, number 11, is Europa Report. And if you haven't seen it, you should see it. Because of all the movies on my list, even Interstellar, I think that Europa Report has it's a found footage movie, and I don't like found footage films. They have to be really extraordinary for me to like them. But this film is about a failed attempt of human beings, you know, by a space agency, sent by a space agency to Europa, the moon of Jupiter, which actually we are going to land a space probe on Europa within the next 2 years, I think. That's what's projected. I'm not sure, maybe 5 years. But it's going to take off really soon if it hasn't already. And anyway, today we're going to land on the moon, by the way. Europa Report is about a crew of five or six, mm-hmm. and what happens to them. And a ship, a spaceship that's about the size of what Americans would put together to send five crew members to some place as far away as Jupiter, because that's who we are. And it's about what happens to them. It is a very human movie. The story isn't about what they found when they reached their destination, although it's pretty fantastic and probably close to the truth. It's about traveling from Earth to the far reaches of the solar system in a tin can. And it's a fantastic movie. Really good. Good acting. You'll know a couple of the actors, but really good acting by everyone. Scary moments, lonely moments, moments that you can really identify with. I love that movie. Love it. Watch it.
Well,
I love
the
soundtrack.
You actually,
Bear McCreary.
You actually had me watch that. And we watched that together, and I was absolutely blown away by that film. Seriously. It's a really good
film.
Thumbs up.
It's a great film.
Yeah.
Really, really.
Agreed.
Really great film.
And a nice shout out to Charlton Copley, who is the lead on that. I love him. And I know you do, too, Stephen.
But he's not really the lead on it. But I don't want to give away any of the movie if you haven't seen it, because it's just really good. It's really good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's probably – but if you've watched Dexter, if you like the series Dexter, the original Dexter, you'll know the other actors also. And one of the female actors, she does a lot of science fiction. So if you watch a lot of science fiction, you're going to recognize her also. And that's from television and film. So the actors are not, like Brad Pitt, but they are people that you've seen before, and they bring a very good humanness to this human story. Okay, number 12 is, I know that you're chomping at the bit for this, okay, Carl? Number 12 on my list is Solaris, and I am both versions. Okay, both versions, because I think they both have worthwhile things in them. But the second version, the music is so good. I listen to it all the time. So without me even saying anything, you guys can talk about Solaris, okay?
Well,
who would have thought that Vicky would listen to an Insane Clown Posse song a lot?
Mm-hmm. True. But I have to say about Solaris, there are two versions, the Russian version, 1972, and the modern version with George Clooney. They're both very good, but the original, the 72, is my number one science fiction film of all time. It hasn't changed in years. It's a tremendous film. It is a three-hour-long film, so you better strap in and pay attention, because this is not – you know, your normal, you know, go off to space and fight aliens and that. This is very, very introspective. The Russian version is very much into, previous relationships that we are with, but also loss of family, loss of nationality. A number of things are really put into this version very much. and I love the Russian version. The American version simplifies it in terms of basically just taking the regret, the loss, and the regret of losing someone. And
Go ahead, David. One, two sides of one very interesting conversation.
Yes. That's a good way to put it. And they're both worthwhile. The American version is only 97 minutes. The Russian version is 3 hours. You can take what you want to take from that. I do love the Russian version, but it is something that you have to pay attention to. Trust me on this.
And not just that. You can't get it in, it's not dubbed, so you have to, for 3 hours, read the closed caption. And so if your eyes are not up for it, you know, you have to watch it in spurts.
Mm-hmm.
Which
closed
I find
curtain,
that...
I wanted to hear me a movie, not watch it. I'll miss the visual on the screen if I have to read them damn there subtitles.
Yeah, well, if you have problems with your eyes, it is worth mentioning because I have problems with my eyes. My eyes, I don't want to get into my eye problems. But when you have to read subtitles, I have that with Crouching Tiger, whatever it's called. I love the movie, but to read the subtitles and watch the action, it's like either or for me. And so it's hard. It's literally hard to absorb the movie and the visuals and read it. And so there are some of us out here who have a problem with that. We have a hard time. So I'm just mentioning that if you're going to watch Solaris, the three-hour movie, and you have problems like I do, just know that.
Well, if you're watching a kung fu movie, and this one, the first real kung fu movie, if you're watching a kung fu movie and the main thing you're worried about is that you have to read the subtitles, then it's not good kung fu in that movie. Right, Carl?
Exactly. You have that one. That, however, it's hilarious.
Well, Crouching Tiger isn't
titles.
Really a kung fu movie.
No, it's a
Crouching
Wuxia.
Crouching Tiger's not a... It's a what?
It's a Wuxia. Which is a different style. It's not really kung fu.
Wuxia.
Yeah. More wire fu.
And,
Wuxia.
Yeah. Watch The Bride with White Hair for a better version of that.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
Agreed. All right,
okay,
Rick.
Number 13 is something that the first time I ever talked to Carl ever a million years ago was about this incredible movie. This movie, I would encourage people to watch the movie on streaming, and then if you really liked it, please try to search it down and buy the special edition. Let's see, I'm going to tell you exactly what it is. Director's Cut Dark City, because the special features on Dark City, the Director's Cut special edition is so good or are so good that you don't want to miss the special features. So anyway, Dark City is one of the most incredible science fiction films ever created, created. It's not 13 because...
I got Tracy to watch it, and she asked me, what's this movie about? I said, we're just going to watch it, and I ain't telling you what it's about. And by the end, the jaw was like dropping on the floor.
Exactly, because when I had my younger son one Friday night, back when he was a teenager, I go, we're going to watch this movie. And he's like, what's it about? And I go, I can't explain it. We're just going to watch it. And he's like, at the end, he's like, oh, my God, what a great movie. It defies explanation.
Well, you know, a lot of people will say, you know, it was The Matrix before The Matrix, but that's not true. That's not even close.
I don't think so either.
Two things I want to say about this film is the acting is absolutely stellar. Cinematography, everything about this is just incredible. But you know what's even better?
Hmm.
You talked about the special features.
Yeah.
Listen to the commentary between Lem Dobbs and Alex Proyas. And it's a great. It's not as good as Soderbergh and Lem Dobbs, but nonetheless, it's a really good commentary.
Listen to both Roger Ebert's commentaries on the regular cut and the director's cut. It's like a fucking filmmaking school.
Dark City was Roger Ebert's top film of that year. That was his number one film.
And also he revered it until his death and spoke of it often. And that's something for a film critic of his caliber, you know. It speaks a lot to how great this film is.
Agreed.
Dark City is, when it comes down to Dark City, Annihilation is not as good because they took liberties with what was in the book to try to make it for the audience to understand, which was just stupid. But Dark City is pure science fiction, and you will connect to it even though you're like, pure science fiction? Oh, my God, I'll never watch that. Well, you'd be missing a jewel, a total jewel of a movie. And it would be like my number one. It would be like number one if I was doing just pure science fiction films.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
there,
now
there you
on
go.
My anything else? Anything? Okay, then my number 14. I'm going to change because I already mentioned this film anyway. I had number 14 as Under the Skin because I really like, a lot of people think it's boring, right, Carl? But I love what I just said. It's like pure science fiction. And if you're not engaged in your mind, then it's going to be boring. So, but that was going to be my number 14. But really, I want to say that Andromeda Strain should be on my top 15 list, so I'm going to put it as Andromeda Strain, Michael Crichton's great book, put into a movie, but here's the thing. It followed the book almost precisely. I read the book when I was a kid before the movie was out, and I was stunned by the fact that the movie followed the book so precisely, and that the movie scared me as much as the book scared me. And so Andromeda Strain, 1971, with people that you probably, actors that most of you probably don't know, just a fantastic science fiction movie.
I do want to say something here. You know, now we... Both Stephen and I love our exploitation. There's an actress in Andromeda Strain by the name of Kate Reid. She's Canadian. Well, she also did another film, which was the knockoff of Andromeda Strain. And in its own right, though it's much less, it's much more lower budget, is really, really good. And if you have not seen Plague, you need to see Plague, too. So, and basically, they even credit Crichton as a story originally from.
Yeah.
They probably don't want to pay it as lawyers.
No, I think they actually did.
I've seen Plagued. I didn't know that tidbit, though.
Mm-hmm.
But she's fantastic. She's not the only female. The other female in this film, I can't think of her name right now, but she's an African-American actress, and she is mm-hmm. just perfect
oh,
as the doctor's assistant. And she's throughout the mm-hmm. whole movie, and she's absolutely perfect, not stereotypical anything. And mm-hmm. and she's beautiful, too. She's so beautiful. But anyway, that's beside the point. The movie is just really gripping. From the moment the deaths start to the things that they find. And they use some they're always talking about working with the computers. And the computers in this movie speak back to you. They ask the computer this, and the computer it doesn't really speak back to you, but it does what it's asked to do. And so it is very science fiction-y, computer in the future type stuff. But it's just really good. It's really, really good. And I got to teach this book once to a science – well, my English Science Academy students. And they all loved it, too. And I got to show the film. And that was the last time those kinds of things ever happened early in the 2010s. So, mm-hmm. anyway. Anything else? Oh, number 15. I couldn't not have the Terminator movies in my top 15 list. Because, for one thing, Arnold's my favorite governator of all time. I wish he was my governor now, because I don't like my governor, but I wish he could be my governor again. But not that. I've loved Arnold Schwarzenegger forever. And the first time I saw the Terminator was the just jaw-dropping. And I have loved Terminator, and especially Terminator 2, since they came out. And so that's my top 15.
Steven, anything to say about Terminators?
Yeah, the first one is real and great. I love this darn low budget, deep, dark, and yes. nasty tone.
Yeah.
Dude, you can't have the villain missing through the middle 45 minutes of the movie and have any tension at all. It's like they took the whole making vacation and they decided, oh, well, we got to get the plot started again.
Well, you know, from a female point of view, the middle of the movie is really gripping and grounds women into that movie, the middle of that movie. Because you have to remember, back then, what did we have? We had Ellen Ripley and a couple of others coming up, but we didn't have a female. I mean, we don't have
yeah,
all kinds of female.
Was, but then, like I said, after the T-1000 vanished for 40 minutes, she didn't have nothing to do. She is basically shown in the background while a little boy and a T-800 bonds with each other.
Well, true, but that's because that's how the story was playing out. That's how the story was playing out, because she's not the one who is – she's the one who brings those two together. From then on, it's their story. I mean, that's an okay thing when the first story was about her. The second story is about her, how she brings – those two elements, the child that she is going to bear, who's going to bring down Skynet, together with the creation of Skynet that's trying to bring down the humans. I think that whole mm-hmm. bonding of the two is extremely necessary. Plus, the fact that the female, I can't think of her first name, Sarah Connor. Sarah Connor always puts herself away from what is happening between her son, because a mother's instinct is to protect her son, but she is now understanding that what Kyle told her back in Terminator 1 is happening before her eyes. And she has to, like, that iconic scene where she's sitting on the picnic table with the guns,
yeah,
and all that, and keeping herself separated from that's necessary stuff for the story.
And the theatrical cut also cuts out Linda Hamilton's best scene when they're changing the chip inside the T-800 and she's ready to catch it in, but Kyle has to stop her, and we get to see that she's severely suffering from PTSD, something they kind of gloss over in the theatrical cut.
Right, right. Well, theatrical cuts, let's just say they're always lesser. And so if you can find a director's cut of any of these movies, especially science fiction, they cut the shit out of science fiction. Some stupid exec goes, oh, I don't understand that. We need to cut it out. And then what happens? They put it in the director's cut, and people are like, oh, that makes sense now. I really like that movie. So you're right,
Dark,
Steven.
There
you're
you
right.
Go. At the opening, they over-explain it.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
at
Dark
the,
City
the,
is a perfect example, you know, with that
narration. Yeah.
All right. So thanks a lot for your 15, Vicki. I really appreciate it. I do want to bring a couple. I'm not going to go over my list in complete, but I wanted to bring a couple up. Things up and get your reaction to it. So you talked about all these 50s movies, and I have to bring one in that you didn't, and that's The Incredible Shrinking Man, which I think is a tremendous film. It's Jack Arnold's best film he ever did, and just so philosophical, just an amazing film, and it's now on Criterion. And I just would suggest everyone watch it. But what's your take on Incredible Shrinking Man?
Well, I remember the first – I actually do remember the very first time I saw it and how I felt about it and how it was like a total loss of control, a total loss of – who you are. It just scared me to death, just absolutely scared me to death. And then, you know, of course, the spider part of it scares everyone, but that, God damn it. Oh, there it is. There's a bug in my room, and I want it out of my room. The movie just, in my mind, it is connected to, like, The Invisible Man. Not that they're written at the same time or anything like that. More like they are, they have the same type of theme.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are all together, the loss of identity, the loss of who you are. And so I really like it a lot.
So I wanted to mention that. And there's one other thing I want to mention, and it's
Paul,
a series.
Real quick.
Oh, Stephen,
real
sorry.
Quick.
Go ahead,
Stephen.
I was amazed how much the movie was daring in going into the sexual politics of an Incredible Shrinking Man.
Yes.
Like, as he grows smaller, his wife grew less sexually attracted with him until the point he starts having an affair with the circus midget until he grows too small to have an affair with her. The feeling of inadequacy, the loss of his manhood as he kept getting smaller and smaller. He's the man. He's the walker of the house. He keeps control of the house. Then he loses control of that.
There's a lot to that film, which is an amazing thing. I also love the last part of it, and I won't give it away. And that becomes very philosophical and like, are we still part of the universe?
That's like a Zen-type ending, damn it.
Yeah, it's a Zen-type ending, absolutely. Now, one other thing I want
You just brought that one thing up. And the one thing that it got right, whoever wrote it, I'm not sure who wrote it. I don't know that movie
Richard Matheson. Richard Matheson.
Oh, okay. See, there you go. Well, he would know. Because by then, physics has already jumped into quantum physics. And the smaller you get, the more you see what the essence of matter is and what the essence of the universe is. And it becomes that whole thing. It's not just loss of self, but loss of everything. Am I just a bunch of atoms? And that's what he was falling into or shrinking into. And it's a very existential type film. Existential in the deepest way.
That's why I love it. You know, I am the one with the philosophy minor. Seriously. I love that film. Now, the other thing I want to mention is a series that I'm surprised is not on your list, and I wonder why, and that's Mad Max.
Okay, I can barely hear you.
Yeah,
and
you idiot.
I know, I can barely hear you. I know you walked away.
Okay, so what I said was a series
I heard you say, why is Mad Max not? Because we did those movies and everything. And the biggest reason why Mad Max is not on this list, and you're going to hate me for this, but Mad Max to me is more dystopian than science fiction. And so and so, you know, you said my favorite science fiction films. And Mad Max is dystopian. It could totally happen. There's no science in it. Other than nuclear bombs.
So this is why I'm bringing it up, because you and I have a disagreement on this. Because when we talk about
I'm not sure there's a disagreement on this.
2-1, motherfucker.
Not sure. Okay, go ahead.
To me, when you talk about dystopian, when you talk about alternate Earths, okay, when you talk about, you know, like Philip K. Dick, The Man in the High Castle, that won the Hugo. They certainly consider it science fiction. Nebula and Hugo.
Wait a second. Wait, there's time travel in Man in the High Castle, okay? There's time travel in it. There's no time travel in Mad Max. Mad Max is this catastrophe happened, and now we have to live through it, and we're going to build these machines and blah, 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 blah. We're going to use women, and we're going to play guitars on these cool machines.
Would you call the Paris sci-fi car?
What? Say that again?
Would you call the Cars That Ate Paris sci-fi?
That's real close, but I could make an argument that it is. I could make an argument that it is, yes.
Same thing.
You're using
old digital, old tech, old everything.
But it's the one thing I do want to...
We haven't seen the world of the new, because there is no going to be new.
Right. So the one thing I do want to mention about Mad Max that I love, and this is the whole series. This is from the first one on to Fury Road, is that the building of the community, I think, is really interesting. And what happens in the cliques and things like that. I also, having some physical difficulties, seeing how certain aspects of society accept people with disabilities and integrates them within the society. I think there's so much world building and so much wonderful things that you have to really think about and extrapolate that because of that, dystopian is science fiction, because you have to extrapolate, well, if this happens, then you got this, 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 and this. So I just wanted to make that argument that we always have, you and I, you know, and we respect each other's
opinions. No, but you're wrong. We do not argue over this. You are so wrong. Don't even put that out there for those people. I don't argue over that. That you're wrong. I don't. Extrapolation makes it science fiction? Go ahead, Stephen. Sorry.
Come here, Carl.
Yes, Stephen.
That's a good, I'm patting you on the head. That's a good call. You spoke your internet bullshit that makes you feel smart. Good for you. That's a good doggy. Now go over and sit down, and maybe afterwards we'll get you your oatmeal, Mr. Kafer.
I'm going to extrapolate that I was walked into a trap right now, and it must be science fiction.
Here's a belt so you can extrapolate Carl upside the head.
I love you both, okay? Even though we disagree,
yeah,
I love you both.
Yeah, but you're wrong. Oh, my God.
Of course. Listen, it's in the contract. We've said it for years. Anything goes wrong, it's Carl's fault. Anything is wrong, he's wrong.
No, usually it's Block Talk's fault nowadays.
That's true.
Yeah, it almost was AT&T's fault today.
True.
Yeah, I heard Al went down.
Yep.
Well.
So anyway, I want to thank you, absolutely, Vicki, for coming on. Stephen, you know how much we love having you on.
Yeah,
and it's so great that the three of us are back together.
You didn't have this first one, Carl, real quick.
Okay,
people
go for
it. People think Hal was the baddest computer that people had ever seen, but they never ran into Colossus, who was the meanest of them.
Hell yeah.
Exactly. Okay, see, I'm sorry, but I should have. I watch that movie all the time. Stephen, you're the one who told me, Vicki, how come you don't have that in your collection? And I'm like, I don't know, I'm stupid. And so then I got it, and now I just can't stop watching it. Because the same things that those tech guys, those AI tech guys are saying out there is the same stuff in that movie. That movie is unbelievably present for today. That is a great science fiction movie.
Yeah, agreed.
Even gets the gold star.
That you would think is a science fiction, but really it is once you watch it, and that's Abre los Ojos.
I don't know that. What is that?
Open your eyes.
Yes.
It's a
Spanish
film that was remade over here, and I'm going to say the remake's title because you need to see the original, about a guy who gets into a car crash, then he notices odd things start to happen around him. And when it becomes sci-fi, which is towards the end, your jaw's going to drop because of what really happened that they didn't tell us at the first.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. Oh,
agreed.
I like films like that. I like stories like that when things start coming together because of a reason that maybe was foreshadowed.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Agreed. Very, very much. Good film.
Can
Good
I watch
film.
That one? I mean, do you guys know if there's a place to watch that?
I'll look, Vicki, and I'll let you know. I've got Just Watch. I'll take a look for Open Your Eyes. Open.
Okay.
I'll take a look.
It might be easy to see the American remake, which is Vanilla Sky with Tom Cruise, but
don't.
Well,
yeah.
You know, there's stuff I appreciate about that movie now that I didn't before. I rewatched it like, I don't know, a year ago. And there's still, you know, science fiction tropes, not tropes, there's science fiction hooks in it that I didn't see before. It's, I don't consider it as bad as I
did. Well, Vanilla Sky isn't science fiction. Now, Abre Los Ojos,
well,
the original, is very.
Well, like I said, there's these hooks in Vanilla Sky and the ending that lends itself to being science fiction. And it's on a bunch of science fiction lists. I mean, not saying people are know anything. I'm not saying people know much. But what I'm saying is that it's people recognize it as science fiction.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. All right.
The problem is when Vanilla Sky got released, the original pretty much got buried.
Yeah. Yep.
Although that's too bad.
But I'll check it and see if we can get it for you, Vic. All right, folks, we're gonna call this a podcast. I want to thank Vicki very much for coming on. Stephen, do you got anything happening over at your network that you want to talk about?
No, I'm fighting a stinking cold. That's what I'm doing.
Okay.
Oh, makes sense. That's why you're kind of rough and coughing. Oh,
scratching. Yeah. Okay. What I can tell you is that tomorrow here on Deviant Legion, we'll have Noel Vera, which would be part one of this series. And Noel and I will be going over our list. Vicki, anything happening for you that you want to talk about? You know, with the film or anything like that?
Yeah. No. Not at all. Except that when you're trying to get the, I don't even want to talk about it. Okay. No, next week we're going to have a show, that's going to probably start a series. And this is about films, about writers of books who Hollywood loves their books so much that they take their books and make them into film after film after film. Think we might be starting with Michael Crichton. And so that's something to look forward to. And Stephen, I would love for you to be on this show. Carl will tell you more later.
I'm feeling up to it.
Yeah,
okay.
You got the King to go through. Dinar Kuntz.
Yes, Kuntz, yes, absolutely. Yes, Stephen King, yeah, of course. There's Philip K. Dick. There's all kinds, absolutely.
Definitely.
So,
everything.
Even like Kim Thompson and Raymond Chandler, even if you get outside of sci-fi, you've got so many that you can deal with.
Could have Matheson, too.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, we're going to start that next week, and we'll have an announcement with that once Vicki and I sit down on a date and everything.
Wait.
Go ahead.
In a couple of weeks on my station, I won't be alone. As I look in back in chrome and travel down that old Fury Road, who will be with me is my fellow back man on the back of the truck.
Oh, me?
What?
No, you'll be the driver.
Me? No, it won't be me.
Okay,
yeah,
okay.
And who else will be? Who will be on the back of one of the gunners helping me?
Me.
I would hope that's me.
I'll
be driving.
I'll be on a bungee set, though.
Absolutely. You know, for those who are listening that don't know, that Stephen and I have been doing this for, it's over 11 years now, Stephen, that we started. Yeah, seriously. And Becky's been with us a lot, too. I mean, we're the original three Musketeers. And it's so wonderful to have all three of us on.
Well, there were people before me, but I've been doing this for 10 years.
Yeah.
9 years. No, 10 years.
Yeah.
Because
no,
10 years would
it's
be
now
Pluto.
10 years. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Kevin's doing his own thing. He's pretty much retired. So is Donnie and Doc.
Yeah.
We are what's left.
Yes.
Absolutely.
We are.
And they can't get rid of us, can they, Stephen? We're not going anywhere.
Well, they should lynch you, but you're in Memphis. So they do that. They wait till you walk down the middle of the road in the middle of the night, and they go, "Hey, there, cowboy! What? Boom!"
All right, folks, we're going to call it tonight.
Then you'll get a good trip down on the Memphis River, floating down the riverside.
Yeah, the Mississippi River, actually. All right, Stephen, Vicki, it's been a great show. I want to thank you both. And we'll see you here tomorrow at 8 p.m. with Noel Vera. And next week we'll be with Vicki, and hopefully Stephen, too, will join us for our new series. All right?
Okay. Bye.
All right. Good night, people. Good afternoon. Good night. Bye-bye.